Hello and welcome to Astrology Studio for Taurus for 2023 into 2024. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer for the next hour or so. Thank you for being a Planet Waves customer and for tuning into astrology the way that I present it to you. Really incredible charts this year for Taurus, just one thing after the next. There are all kinds of wonderful benefits described in the planets and a few cautionary notes. For example, most of the solar return charts this year have Mercury retrograde, but there's good reason for that. Just to give you an overview of what I'm going to be handling in this reading. In case you follow the astrology, but of course, as you know, I don't bog the reading down in technicalities, but I like to reference them and keep my my notes in the margin so that people who know astrology can understand what I'm speaking about and possibly seek other interpretations of those same aspects or shoot me an email and we can talk about it. So first of all, there is going to be an eclipse of the moon on Beltane. That's an eclipse of the moon in Scorpio, your opposite sign, or your seventh house if you're Taurus rising. And then Jupiter enters Taurus. That happens on, I believe, May 16th. Another really interesting and a collection of interesting charts. Over the summer, Venus, your ruling planet, that is to say Venus rules Taurus, the moon is exalted in Taurus, so there's big news from the moon being eclipsed in Scorpio, and then Venus will be retrograde throughout much of the summer in Leo. That is your fourth house or solar fourth house. Mercury retrograde, of course, mentioned that. And then we are at the beginning, the dawn of this era of Pluto in Aquarius. This is important for Taurus and all the fixed signs because Aquarius is a fixed sign and Pluto is going to be going over the top of your solar chart or your natal chart if you're Taurus rising. And that means it is now in and will be in the 10th house, coming and going for about a year and a half. And then it will remain there until 2023. Through 2024 or so. This is the longest Pluto transit of our lifetimes, because Pluto is moving toward aphelion, far from the sun. It's not there yet, but it's done with perihelion, which was, what I think, back in the Pluto and Scorpio days. Here we are. So, of course, I'll be talking about the activity in Aries, and let's get a flavor of what this astrology is all about. So we begin with Mercury retrograde. This is kind of the thing that is kind of influencing Taurus the most now. And what was so interesting about this Mercury retrograde is that, as you know, Uranus, and I forgot to mention, Uranus is in your sign and will be for a few more years, an unusual kind of sensation for Taurus, which unless you're very old, That is to say, about 80. You've never experienced this, and if you did, you're really young. When you did, you probably weren't going for astrology readings. So this is a new thing for us, and this has been happening now since 2018. The phase in was 18 to 19. So let's focus that. Then I'll tell you about how Mercury retrograde is kind of dancing with Uranus in your sign. So Taurus is pretty much the rock of the zodiac. It is the first of the fixed signs. It's the first of the earth signs. So it is designed, it would seem to me, in this kind of mental schema of astrology, to provide grounding, to have something tangible and solid. And that's what Taurus is. Its symbol is a crescent moon over a circle. So it's kind of it's either how you use your imagination. It's either the crescent moon rising over the earth, or it's a representation of a cow with horns. And so the cow was always the dividing line between wealth and poverty. If you had a cow, you had milk, you could plow the fields, and you basically had help, you know, with the kind of rough elements of the earth before all of this technological age that we live in, and tractors guided by GPS plowing the fields without any human involvement. Kind of a creepy and frightening thought. So Taurus is about the wealth of the earth, and all wealth ultimately comes from the earth. Even Bitcoin has to be mined with electricity, and you don't have electricity, well, alien technology aside, you don't have power without something coming from the earth. So all wealth comes from the earth, and that, you could say, is one of the keynotes or themes of Taurus. And so Taurus is about our ability to sustain ourselves and our livelihoods and our basic possessions, available cash, tools of the trade, assets, personal assets, and our values, the value that we place on things. And so Taurus is a very important sign for its orientation on values for all of us. And Uranus is all about transition, often rapid and radical transition. Taurus is also about instability, revolutions, and revelations, inventions of various kinds. And so we have been living through an unusually turbulent phase when it comes to the whole matter of values, particularly since Uranus entered Taurus in 2018. There have been a lot of shakeups, and the shakeups since that time have become increasingly personal. So this is a factor of the digital age, where electrical technology and digital technology will invade as close as they can to the essence of a human being. You know, to the point where they'll say, well, it's just the size of a grain of rice, and then they're going to just jab you with a little scanny chip inside of your whatever wrist or neck or something like this. And this transit also represents that very thing, the infusion of technology into people. And Taurus is a famously Luddite sign. One of my favorite Taurus jokes is, you don't need a new radio when your old radio will suffice just fine. But who the hell buys radios anymore? But if you're a Taurus, you might just have a radio. You might be your grandmother's radio. And you might just sit and listen to it when you have your morning coffee. So there's this sort of technological infusion happening in our era. And I would just remind you to notice how that is happening to you, what that is about with you. And I've been warning for a long time, don't let them put any technology into your body. It can't come out. You're never the same again. And at the same time, there's also this radical transformation of who you feel you are and who you think you are that is related to this internal revolutionary impulse, but it has to be a factor connected to the environment. There's just no way to separate them. We are in and part of our environments. And so I would say that just as a point of important background on this whole matter of Uranus and Taurus, well, what are your newer attitudes and values toward technology? How are you adapting to this constant, nonstop, rapid, advancement all around you and demanding that you, I think, do a lot of things you're really not interested in doing? So then we get to, how this kind of emerges in the current moment. And, a week ago or so, Mercury stationed retrograde, and it did so in quite a close conjunction to Uranus. It was 2 degrees apart. So in the In the model of consciousness that is described by the solar system, Mercury was advancing along, moves faster than Uranus, of course. Mercury goes around the sun three times a year, Uranus once, a little less than once per century, big difference. So Mercury kind of creeps up, and then it stops, and it goes retrograde, as if hesitating to make a big change, as if hesitating to make some enormous decision. And there are important factors that are guiding and influencing you. And the way we think of this in astrology is when you want to know what a planet's about, you know, you have your concept of Mercury being about thought, sentience, communication, commerce, trade, to some extent money, but not motivation, money. And it represents the second house in your chart. So anything that starts in Taurus, whether Taurus Sun, Taurus Rising, has as its second place Gemini. And so there is a there are big decisions you're making around money. They may involve a partner, because throughout Taurus season, Juno, the asteroid associated with partners, is in Gemini. So that's pretty interesting. What's going on there? And this may involve a partner's assets in some way. It may involve a partner as a kind of an asset. You may consider, I mean, we should all consider our partners a kind of an asset, not chattel, but an asset. And so there is something very important here going on. And it would seem to me this condition of Mercury creeping up to Uranus and then retreating back almost all the way to the beginning of Taurus would seem to be about having thought something most of the way through and then decided you hadn't thought it through. This is all a metaphor. It'll come in your own form. And then deciding it was time to do some kind of a review or reassessment or think it through or decide carefully what was right for you. And now Mercury's retrograde and you are doing that. And I think the most important question of the second house in our times is price the only measure of value? I've noticed in my many years of doing this work that people are often quite disconnected from their values. They say they have one set of priorities, one set of, guiding principles. And then the question is how fast they abandon their principles. And there seems to be a game being played by society right now that involves pushing people into abandoning their principles. After all, principles are deeply personal. They are all about the experiences you've had and what you've learned from them, and then using those experiences and what you've learned as the basis for future decisions. And so there's something important here in this retrograde Mercury in Taurus about really understanding your principles and sticking to them at decision time. It's very easy, right, to have principles right up to the moment that you make a decision. A lot of people do this. I'm not sure that I do. But they get to the point of decision. They say, fuck it. Who cares about all these principles? I'm just going to do this thing that I thought my whole life was wrong, and now I'm just going to do it. Well, when you find yourself, if you find yourself, you might not be one of those people who even considers just throwing their principles out the window. But it's the time to reflect and to think about it. So that's Mercury retrograde. I think that where Taurus is concerned, finding the right balance between it's not quite about income and outflow, though that's often the disguised form of the matter. What I would say that Mercury retrograde in your sign really symbolizes is, do you make your investments where your values really are? Whatever that might mean to you. You know, are you Are you like an environmental activist all day long, and then you have ExxonMobil stock, for example? That would be a gross example of values not aligning. And the other thing with having Mercury on, Gemini on the second house is, well, you may have two sets of values operating kind of in parallel, in harmony, or in conflict. But are they? Question mark. Okay, so that's Mercury retrograde. Probably could have made that shorter, but I think it's pretty important. And it's this is a fairly powerful Mercury retrograde. And Taurus is an exciting sign for Mercury to be retrograde, because it's as if Mercury is going to find all of these interesting crevices in what is normally so solid and tangible, and find things that are less tangible in the midst of all of that tangibility. Okay, so in other immediate news, and something that's only going to happen once, is that there is about to be an eclipse of the moon in Scorpio on the 5th, 1:33 p.m. Daylight time, New York time. What is so intriguing about this eclipse is that it is happening right at the midpoint of Taurus. And the midpoint of Taurus, you may know, has a name. It's called Beltane, when the sun is right at exactly 15 degrees of Taurus. And this connects to the Aries point. It's as if you can find, the Aries point. I've never seen a Fish concert, but Trey Anastasio, the guitar player for Fish, has this way that he finds a spot on the stage where, and it's only several spots, and he knows how to find them. I don't know how they did. I've never read an article about this, but I've seen him do it. And he finds a spot on the stage where there's this extra resonance, where suddenly the entire stage becomes the instrument, and it's this very unusual sound, and it's not the normal sound of a guitar, and everyone knows what he's doing. He's finding the resonant spot on the stage. That's what the Aries point, meaning the first degree of Aries, Cancer, Capricorn, or Libra, is. And there are also little hidden spots of resonance at the midpoint of the fixed signs, one of which is Taurus. And so there's about to be a full moon eclipse right at that resonant spot that amplifies and expands the sound and shifts the tone, and in the case of the Aries point, reaches many more people. So some kind of event with high impact. The thing for you personally is that your seventh place, anything opposite Taurus, whether it's your sun or your rising, is about relationships. And the moon is one of the rulers of the sign Taurus. The moon is exalted in Taurus, and so it is right up there with being one of the rulers of Taurus. To give you an idea how close, in the ancient system of points based on sect, exaltation, rulership, detriment, fall, and all that, rulership gets 5 points and exaltation gets 4 points. So it's pretty much, in my view, the same thing. So what this to me is talking about is that there is this acceleration phase in a relationship. Now, I think of it as an acceleration mainly for the reason that after much long meditation on eclipses, kind of one of the first things I dove into in astrology and try to make sense of, and, you know, a few decades on, they sort of make some sense. But I decided that lunar eclipses were the more powerful kind of eclipse, because you can watch the moon run through a full month of lunar phases where it goes from full to new and back to full in a matter of hours. So there is, in a lunar eclipse, essentially the experience of living a month in a few hours. And I think, oh, well, there's a lot of months. Well, yeah, but if you live through a month of your life in a few hours and you landed a month later, you'd think, holy, what was that? Where am I? Just a month later. And so when you take an eclipse as a metaphor in a certain part of life, it means there's going to be a rapid acceleration of events. And the acceleration can bring things closer. The acceleration can come with a revelation that something has to change. But the important thing to remember is, though the eclipse is happening in your seventh place, in your house of relationships, the moon represents you. So if it seems like some thing, in air quotes, is changing, that thing is the most likely to be you. It may seem like a partner is changing. It may seem like someone external to you is rapidly evolving in their attitudes and values in a way you may or may not agree with, but because it's the moon, it's very important to take the events and developments and changes in the total relationship environment as an expression of what you are personally going through in your personal evolution. And so this is happening. And it is in this resonance spot. It's in one of those magic sweet spots on the stage where the entire stage becomes the body of the guitar. Another kind of eclipse metaphor, as well as an Aries point metaphor, because eclipses have the same property of bringing together many different dimensions of time and space. That's what an eclipse is. It's a multidimensional event. It involves metacycles, many different solar cycle, lunar cycle, and eclipse cycle, the lunar node cycle. There's many cycles running, and they all go off at once when the eclipse happens. And so, therefore, this is a significant point of transition for you. And I would say that having the approach to relationships of taking it as it comes a little bit, and just having the position of just saying, okay, where am I at today? You go through the day, you end the day. Okay, where was I at today? Well, let's review that. And then you think, okay, you wake up the next morning and you ask yourself again, where am I at today? Where am I at in relationship to this environmental factor that's most likely to be a relationship because it's in the seventh? And then you just sort of mark your progress day by day. And if you keep your attention on the here and now, it'll be easier to not get lost. Keep your focus. And remember that your life is about you first and about everyone else second, purely by definition of being alive and being in a body. All right, let's break for a little music. This piece is by Zhelko. I'm playing whole pieces from this series now, Vision Quest Ambient Artist, and it is the one that he has titled and designed for the tarot card, The Empress. Since we began with an outer planet, let's work our way, well, not exactly in, but let's talk about another outer planet that is profoundly influential and will be in your life, and that is Pluto in Aquarius. So this is the kind of entry portal to an entire new era of your life. That's how big of a thing Pluto entering Aquarius is for you. In the chart for Taurus, whether it's Taurus rising or Taurus sun, the 10th place is Aquarius. So the 10th place is essentially about two things. It's about reputation and it's about responsibility. Now, some say that the 10th is about what you want to be known for. I would say, that's true. That's significant. But it's also about whether you're known for what you achieve. And there's a lot about drive connected to the 10th house. And for some, that is the drive to be known, which is kind of a weird thing. And for others, it's about doing something for which you are known. Now, that's not so strange. So the kind of dualism of the 10th is the question, are you working to build a reputation, or are you building a reputation in the process of working? And then to put them together, you have like a set of questions around, if you want to succeed at what you're doing, are you doing the 10th house work to make sure that you succeed at what you're doing? Because it does not happen automatically. With Pluto, however, we go into special territory in the 10th house because Pluto is such a deep driver of the one thing that Jeff Green got right, which is that Pluto represents an evolutionary impulse. It's a very deep metric of the movement of something that is in some way far, far beyond you. It's about the movement of a force that is going to in some way transform you, advance you, and make it inevitable that you will move forward. Now, the 10th also has the responsibility facet to it. And Aquarius would seem to represent a very high degree of social responsibility involvement and investment in something that goes well beyond your own personal and private needs. This story expands into Pisces, where there's a lot going on. We'll get there next. But with Aquarius, there is the theme of groups, which becomes the theme of community. And there's also a technological theme, because Aquarius is the overlay of social patterns and energy patterns. And when you overlay social patterns and energy patterns and try to think of a really good example for that, you end up with something like Facebook, or you end up with the internet generally. You end up with this kind of electrical phantom that has taken over all of our social interactions, right down to this one. I mean, a reading like this might be possible without the internet, but it would be very difficult to, you know, transport this much data, i.e. the file this size, to as many people as needed to make it worthwhile. And in the past, this was usually done by Xerox copying things and throwing them into the mail. And so it's easy to see, if you look, the ways in which the electrical and digital influences have completely taken over our social reality. And this is not territory that you are likely to be especially thrilled about. You recognize there's a loss here, I think. And anybody with earthy grounding has to recognize that there's a loss in some way, and there's an exchange. But it's important to know what exactly is being lost. And I think what is being lost is people's contact with their souls. And so here comes Pluto into your 10th house, into Aquarius, representing this impulse, this deep influence of movement and growth and connection to your soul, and in some larger format than just strictly personal or private in the 10th house, where you're going to make contact with many people, where you will have an influence over many people, and where you will be visible. And so there is, I think, a recovery mission that this is about. Is not going retro into some previous era, but it's about going forward into a time when we are very much at risk of losing our humanity. And there are going to be plenty of people who respond to this influence by essentially joining the transhumanist movement in some way, which is about the transformation of humans into digital objects, digital devices. And there are going to be others who decide that we have to work something out in a fully conscious way to keep hold of our humanity while the technology is advancing faster than we can process it. Which of those camps are you going to be in? The third one would be simply being a hapless, passive victim to the external power factor of the 10th house. So another thing the 10th house represents is corporate and government power. And so when Pluto gets into Aquarius, which is kind of the corporate power of all of this communication technology that we're in, and commerce technology, it's going to have an influence on you. You're going to feel these, let's say, incursions into your privacy and social life in some tangible way. And the question is, well, where are you going with this? What are you doing about this? Or are you going to take an active role, or are you going to take a passive role? Plenty of people really know of no other option other than to take a passive role in this. Under the influence of Pluto, that is, let's say, coming out of this astrology office, not advised. This is definitely something you want to be involved with. And so then the question becomes one of, what is your involvement? And what I've been saying over and over again to Taurus, now going back a couple of years and making sure that I've at least kind of peppered my reading and listening audience with this idea, which is that you're the one who steps up and takes leadership in this era. And there is a need for leaders who are humane, who are grounded, and who have a sense of transpersonal responsibility. That's what Aquarius is about on one level, and Pluto certainly touches the transpersonal level way beyond the individual, way beyond the strictly private, but it reaches into the most private factors of our lives. And so the leadership you're taking is nothing less than being present for the fact that a great many people are wittingly or unwittingly, happily or unhappily, surrendering their humanity to something that is far beyond their understanding. And what I think is essential for you is to maintain your understanding of what is happening. Now, to maintain your understanding of what is happening, you may need to introduce yourself to some new ideas. I remember in 2020 sitting at this very desk reading an article about the plan, the overall plan, which to many people at that time sounded like it was completely outrageous. Like, this is never going to happen, and you're a conspiracy theory. I'm deleting your emails. Fuck you. Go to hell. And in actual fact, that plan came to fruition in 2021. It came to fruition in 2020 with all kinds of control measures. And then the kind of training wheels of biosecurity zones, basically by excluding everyone and then slowly allowing them back into society when they had complied with a technology upgrade to their bodies. That's transhumanism. When anyone applies an upgrade to their body, that is, by definition, transhumanism. And when you have to flash a QR code or pass some kind of a scan to get into your campus, office, a restaurant, or something like that, that is the imposition of an authoritarian state. And most people were happy to go along with it because they felt in some way they were contributing to making society safe. Well, what are they going to say? They're going to send out a recruitment application to join the Stasi and spy on your brother or your wife's boyfriend, whatever, your wife's boyfriend, baby. You know what I'm saying? Are you the spy for the government at the family Thanksgiving party, or are you just a member of the family coming to the Thanksgiving party? And so we're going to see this more. And because you have Pluto in the 10th, you are going to have Pluto in the 10th now for 20 years. You have a direct line of sight and you have direct involvement in the plan on one level or another, whether you voluntarily comply, haplessly comply, whether you join the clampdown and figure, well, if I can't beat him, join him, or if you do what I think at least most people who can even stand the sound of my voice are likely to do, which is to want to help the human family maintain its humanity in some way. And this is going to be a lot of work and a lot of responsibility, but you are right there for this. And I think that the journey of Uranus through Taurus, right, this like electrical planet moving through this sign that feels like nicely polished wood or a beautiful garment of clothing where the cloth feels good, or cuddling up with your cat or dog. Those are very Taurian experiences, infused with pure electricity, Uranus. You've had time to think about this. You've had time to feel the changes this is imposing onto your body and your consciousness, and to decide how you feel about them, to experience them and make a real decision about them. And so you are not entering this Pluto and Aquarius phase without significant experience. You've had about four or five years of getting a sense of all of this pressure. And I know that many people have regrets of having submitted in any way to the transhuman incursion that's been pushed on us. And I do suggest we remember it as that we think of it as some influence that has attempted to fundamentally change the way we as humans relate to our humanity. I mean, it was packaged as something, you know, doing good and, you know, helping people and not killing grandma and all that. But in hindsight, anyone can see that it had nothing to do with that. That it was all about power. And so the question of Pluto and Aquarius is how you respond to power. Now, you've lived through 3 years of Saturn and Aquarius that recently ended. So you have had a sense of that. Now, Saturn has moved into another very important angle of your chart, which is the 11th place, or Pisces. And this is this whole combination of like 10th house Aquarius, 11th house Pisces, perfect astrological kind of puzzle, you might say. So the 11th is the benefits of friends. It's the benefits of the professional reputation that you've built. It is the benefits of being able to function professionally within any system. We function within a system, right? That's what professional means, is that we're accredited in some way, acknowledged to be functioning within a larger system. Usually it used to mean like licensed doctor, lawyer, Indian chief. These were the professions, right? You weren't a profession if you were – it wasn't a profession if you were an artist, But it's a profession if you are a doctor. Well, now we understand there's professional artists as well. So that's all about fitting into society. And with Pisces there, this is a very wide open view of what's possible for a person. And it's also a kind of a sense of being a friend to humanity, right? That Pisces is an even wider lens than Aquarius. Aquarius is kind of a limited set. When we get to Pisces, we're all the way out to potentially, you know, every person in the entire stadium or every person in the city or every person on the planet, right? It's the unthinkably large groups, whereas Aquarius is just kind of countable groups, right? Countable numbers of people. And you've had Neptune going here through here for a long time, and this has created a kind of a blur on a number of levels, and you will start to figure out where the blur was when the window starts to be cleared, when the fog starts to clear. And the thing that's going to clear the fog is Saturn in the 11th house. And so with that, you're, I think, likely to, and it seems like it would be time to make a number of adjustments, which is adjustments to who you hang out with, what your definition of friend is. Now, this is, everyone's going to have a few different definitions of friend, right? There's professional friends, and there's friends who are like merchants who you shop from, but you're on very friendly terms with. They might help you out one day if you need it. And then there's like friends, the friends who are going to be there for you through thick and thin, the friends who are going to be the people that you count on the most. And then in the 11th, though it's Pisces, there's this concept of group involvement. And so the question is, what is the appropriate level of group involvement? And what I think Saturn is going to do to this part of your life that's been dominated by Neptune, where there is no real clarity with Neptune. There might be a sense of inspiration or euphoria or confusion or deception or delusion or something, but there's not really very much clarity with Neptune, especially in Pisces, which kind of amplifies it. Saturn comes along like the cosmic squeegee and wants to clear the window and clear the air and clear up your definitions and give what was not tangible and solid tangibility. And this is crucial in your social interactions. Now, if we think back at the 10th, which is ruled by Aquarius in your chart, well, that suggests that your social interactions are more than being about pleasure. Your social interactions are always going to come with a level of responsibility and accountability, and it's difficult to be off-duty. But the thing is, with Pluto and Aquarius, you're never really going to be off-duty. You're always, I think, being called anyway to be kind of a regulator of the social environment around you. And this is also carried forward by Saturn moving through your 11th. Saturn rules Aquarius. So you are moving into a role of personal influence, which is going to be both formal in the form of the 10th house, formal power, and informal power described by Pisces in the 11th house. And I think it's important to remember that of the two, informal power is the more influential one. The student who has a lot of influence with a community of students, like the most respected athlete on the campus at any one time, is going to have more informal power than the president of the campus, who can make decisions and move around departments and open and close buildings. But it's the informal power that is so crucial to human dynamics and human interaction. And so both of these houses now for years, several years, right? Saturn has just arrived a couple of months ago in Pisces. And right, 2 weeks after that, Pluto arrived. That's going to be there even longer. There's going to be this constant balancing of formal and informal power, and the decision of how much influence you are being called to have and want to have or that you know that you must just simply take up because it's the thing to do. And you may or may not be the type of person who considers yourself someone who is in any way interested in leadership. You may be perfectly uninterested in leadership, and often these are the people whose leadership is the most crucial. There's that old thing about the philosopher king. I think Plato's concept and the first requirement for the philosopher king is they don't want the job. So all of these people who aspire to power, I think, are the least trustworthy of all. Is crucial to not trust them in the first instance. And if you're someone who does not aspire to power, that's important. And yet you may be hearing the calling. You may understand that you're the best person for the job, that there may be something that you've just personally got to take responsibility for, and you're going to do it. And this may not result in any personal benefit to you. It's another crucial thing about leadership is that leaders have to make real leaders, not just self-serving people like we tend to see in the newspaper, need to make decisions that are not strictly based on their own personal benefit. And this is very challenging for someone with a strong Taurus signature, as you have, and especially with so much activity going on in Aries, which is saying that not only does everything start with you, but it's supposed to be all about you, but it's not. Your life is no longer going to be all about you. There's a level that's important as getting up and getting dressed and brushing your teeth and having breakfast, which we all agree is important. But that on that same level of necessity of making sure that you are, or just being called into it in some way, fully involved in what you're called to be involved with, having nothing to do with what you might like, having nothing to do with what you may have ever planned to do. That's what a calling is. That's what the Dharma is when it taps you on the shoulder and says, look, I know you weren't planning this, but this is the thing to do. And as far as I can tell, this is going to be a regular occurrence, and particularly with this eclipse about to happen, right at the exact midpoint of your seventh house, which is going to shift your whole concept of what a relationship is and bring you into a much wider sphere emotionally and spiritually and in many other ways, your world is getting larger and will continue to get larger and will be a much bigger place than you imagined. This is Zhelko's piece dedicated to the fourth Trump, the Emperor. Now we come to Jupiter in your birth sign and Venus in one of the more prominent houses in your chart, which is the fourth, Leo, fixed sign as well. They are the greater and lesser benefics from classical astrology. Jupiter, of course, the greater benefic. Venus, the lesser benefic. I don't think you've ever heard me use those words, have you? Anyway, that matters. They are generally the planets that give gifts. But there are, let's say, caveats around that, and let's get into a bit of what this might be about. So first thing is Jupiter in your sign, absolutely a positive. The caveat is how much of a good thing, and also Jupiter has a tendency to magnify. And so it's going to magnify whatever's there. And so if there's something going on where you think, well, I didn't ask for this or bargain for this, it may have existed previously in a smaller form, and then Jupiter comes along and magnifies that factor, and then suddenly it exists in a very large form. Okay, so be mindful of that. First thing that's going to happen when Jupiter enters Taurus on the 16th of May, 2023, where it will stay for about a year and a week. I think it moves into Gemini around the 24th or something like that, is it's going to make a square to Pluto. And this is an important aspect out of the catalog. And since it only happens, since there's a Pluto square from Jupiter, I think every 7 years or something, a few people have it, right? It's a distinctive aspect. And you're going to have it by transit and in a solar return context, so it'll be a dominant influence for you. And that square is about power. It's about the desire to concentrate power for its own sake. And so it has a shadowy quality to it, which is that the evolutionary concept of Pluto can get kind of lost along with the wisdom principle of Jupiter. And then they transform into something else, which is some form of dominant impulse. I would suggest being highly mindful for that kind of a thing. And for some people, it's going to feel good. And it, you know, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying that it's necessary to be mindful of this combination of factors because they will be influential. And when you talk about power, it's necessary to recognize that the great majority of people simply feel powerless. They simply feel at the mercy of everything from whether the bus comes late to their wacky boss, to their busybody coworker, to a partner or parents or someone trying to make decisions for them and so on and so on. So the fact that people feel powerless, and that often comes with not wanting to do the work that it takes to actually have the knowledge and the strategic skills to actually get on top of certain things that we would otherwise be dominated by, a square like Jupiter square Pluto can feel good because it is saying, get some influence, figure out how to do this, or using advantages in any way. And so you, under this influence, you want to be really mindful how you use your advantages. I'm not saying don't use them. Obviously, use your advantages, but be mindful how you do it. And Jupiter represents knowledge. It represents the accumulation of knowledge and wisdom. This has very little to do with the god Jupiter, but the god Jupiter is the king of the gods in the Roman pantheon. And it is translated through many, many, many generations of astrology into a kind of wisdom principle. But it can be aggrandizing. And so you always want to maintain a sense of proportion with Jupiter. And particularly when Jupiter is square to Pluto, to make sure that you're, you know, going easy on any kind of self-importance or any form of I know more than you do. One of the favorite games to play right now in the digital age is the I know more than you do game. And I have found that when people play this game, they usually know little to nothing at all. And so keep an eye on that. So Jupiter is going to magnify a number of things as it moves through your sign. And those will be represented by a diversity of planets that are... that ephemeris that I made of things in Taurus right now. So one of the things it's going to do is make the square to Pluto, and then it's going to make a conjunction to the lunar north node, which is in your sign. And the lunar north node in your sign is a guiding principle. It is a discovery waiting to happen. It is a tropism that you are waiting to notice whether you have followed it. So the North Node, when I say it acts like a tropism, what I mean is, I mean, everyone's noticed that their plants by the window lean into the light. Their roots grow down the direction that water flows. The roots of plants generally do not grow up unless the part of the plant's plant to fall off and become a clone of the original. So you'll see spider plants and jade plants start to grow roots in midair. Well, they're planning to go toward the water. The North Node represents a spiritual tropism. And when it's been in your sign now, let's see, for a while, you know, almost, well, more than a year, followed around by eclipses, and it'll be heading toward Aries quite soon. But before it does that, it's going to make a conjunction to Jupiter. And so there may be a very significant discovery of something that you simply want to do, something you simply must do, that is the thing to do that you are, and that you are called to do. And I would remind you that with Pluto going into the fixed sign Aquarius, which is your 10th solar house, that the patterns represented by Aquarius, potentially the most fixed of all the fixed signs, just between you and me, I've hardly seen people more resistant to learning than people with Aquarius Sun and Aquarius Mercury. And that resistance to learning is, it seems to be innate in Aquarius. It simply thinks it knows already what the right thing is and has a way of not knowing when it doesn't know. This is about patterns. And when Pluto gets into Aquarius, that is going to start to make ripples and disruptions and fractures in the patterns. And one of the patterns that Aquarius holds for you is the pattern of your reputation, the pattern of your professional intention, the pattern of your goals, the pattern of how you think of yourself in relationship to the world. And all of that's going to be up for grabs when Pluto starts to take hold. And the eclipse on the right on the Aries Taurus cusp a couple of weeks ago was the first major Pluto event. It was a square to 89 degrees or something like this. And the second major Pluto event, Pluto and Aquarius event, is going to be Jupiter squaring Pluto, and also the full configuration of the pattern is Jupiter square Pluto square the lunar nodes. So this is actually a much, much higher energy pattern than it might look like at first. Oh, very nice. Jupiter's entering your sign. Ah, well, when Jupiter enters your sign, it's going to square Pluto, and then it's going to make a conjunction to the North Node. This implies that Pluto is square the nodes. The nodes are retreating retrograde, you know, overall retrograde. So when there is a thing square the nodes, anything at all square the nodes, 90 degrees to the nodes, at what's called the bending, the thing that is at the 90-degree angle can be seen as being sitting right in the middle of the nodes. Barbara Hanclow taught me this. It's a very clever and important idea, I think, because the nodes are very hard for most people to understand. The nodes move through the chart like this evolutionary gust. They are like an invisible wind tunnel. And that's why I say it's a tropism. And the wind tends to gust in the direction of the North Node, though at times, like any kind of a tidal system, there can be flow in either direction. What you're going to have here is a situation where you've got the North Node activated by Jupiter. That's a big activation. It's big. It's the biggest planet, 1,200 times the size of the Earth. And it is significant. And then that is square Pluto. So the implication here is that there is going to be this dialogue between North Node, Jupiter, and Pluto that lands right in your sign. And so what's going on here is a reorientation. It's on many levels. By many levels, I mean that it will influence the way you set goals. It will influence the way that you perceive yourself in the world. And then this combination of Pluto starting to influence your 10th house represents you shifting your concepts about who you are in the world. And that shifting your concepts means an unlearning process. There's going to be a lot of unlearning going on under the influence of Pluto in Aquarius. And literacy in our times is not the ability to read. Literacy is the ability to learn, unlearn, and relearn over and over again in a not only repetitive but evolving fashion, so that you're moving from one place to the next. And so there's a loosening of patterns indicated by Pluto in Aquarius. There's a loosening of relational patterns indicated by the South Node in Scorpio and the eclipse of the moon in Scorpio, right? That is saying something really significant about how you relate to your world is changing. It's going to take a leap forward. That's the 1 month in 2 hour thing. And then another activation of the North Node is going to orient you on where you're going, on your future, on what your impulse to become is about. And this impulse to become is coming to you many different ways. Taurus, too, is a fixed sign. It tends to stay put, but there is no staying put right now. And it's also very dangerous to drive staring at the rearview mirror all the time, which is what we, particularly in the West, tend to do. We tend to stare in the rearview mirror. And under this kind of digital chaos that we're all living with, where it just can seem like either nothing means anything or something means one day at 2 o'clock, one thing at 2 o'clock and a whole other thing at 2:30, if that doesn't make you a little seasick, I don't know what does, is that there is a redefinition of what things mean and the need to let go of what they meant. And so that means look forward, point yourself forward, and understand the relationship between the past, the present, and the future. The most tried and true way to point yourself forward is to be where you are and then look where you want to be. I was having a talk one night. I was hanging outside the Quick Check. There's a lot to do where I live. It's really exciting here. And I was hanging outside the gas station at a table outside the snack bar and said hello to a state trooper. And we got into a conversation about driving. I asked him what it was like to patrol the New York State Thruway. Troop T, it's what they do. They drive around on the New York State Thruway. And we got into a conversation about how you drive safely. And he said, most people are looking way too close to the front of their car to be driving safely. He says you have to be looking as far out as you can, and then you bring your gaze back. But you always need to be looking where you're going to be in about a minute or two or three. It's probably as far as you can see up the road, right? A minute is a mile, driving at a highway speed. And not just like staring down at the ground right in front of you. How many times have we all been caught short by a car stopping short? If you're looking further out, you're going to see that. And so all of this is saying to look further out and to let go of past tendencies. And most importantly, I think with Pluto in Aquarius, past goals. There has to be an updating of your files on goals that you no longer hold. This is a very interesting spiritual exercise and quite productive to make a list of goals that you say you have and that you keep thinking you have and you keep aspiring to and working to and then all that, that you actually are not any longer interested in. This will free up energy, and it'll also help you have a more organized analysis of your priorities, which is crucial with all the activity with Mercury in your sign, for example. That too represents a reprioritization. Getting rid of the old goals, like writing them down, saying, "Yeah, I wanted to go to Alaska, but I'm not really interested anymore. I really want to go to Montana. I used to want to be a famous babysitter, but now I've decided I want to be a famous writer." You have to update your files. All of this is just blaring. Update your files. South Node, Eclipse, Pluto moving into the 10th, which is itself a complete reevaluation of your agenda, your priorities. Mercury retrograde in your first house, another reassessment of your priorities. And then Jupiter activating the North Node, right? That's saying there's some place you really want to be. And here's a little clue. I think that in the first instance, the presence of Pluto in the 10th is about a dismantling, not specifically a goal, unless the goal is to be like megalomaniac. Sure, Pluto in the 10th is wonderful for that. You know, you want to conquer the neighboring town or, you know, put your competitor out of business. Pluto in Aquarius is in the 10th is a perfectly wonderful influence to help you do that. But I think for most, you know, civilized and friendly human beings who are, you know, intent on living well and being decent to their neighbors, Pluto is about an unlearning process. It's about a deconstruction of an idea of organized power that is the essential, let's say, energy liberator, along with crossing all goals off the list, of your future. And we see that in the square of Pluto to the nodes. It's the thing you've got to deal with. And so if you take Pluto as an unlearning process, this is easier to understand. And if you use this concentrated force of Pluto as a way to, have kind of a power tool to unlearn things and to let go of patterns. That's Aquarius, is patterns. This will immediately flow into the attractive quality of Jupiter on the North Node, right in your first place, right in Taurus, your ascendant or your sun sign. So that's something of an idea here. Let's see if I can find anything square the nodes on the other side. Very interesting. At the time of the eclipse, which is the main chart that I'm using the eclipse chart and then Jupiter entering Taurus. At the time of the eclipse, Pallas Athene is opposite Pluto and square the nodes as well. What's that? That's about family politics. It's in your fourth place. We're going to get to the fourth in a second. And so be aware that families are political institutions. Most people don't study politics. They abhor politics, and they don't realize that politics is a kind of a portable game that can be transported to anything, from the Cub Scouts to the PTA, to the United States Senate, to how the world managers get along and slug out, you know, who's going to get to be the, you know, dominate the internet for the next 10 years. Whose turn is it? So politics is everywhere. And the other thing that you're being told to deal with, square the nodes, squared by Jupiter, is understand that the family system is a political entity, and political entities always subvert individual volition, individual choice. It's always about what you must do for something that you are told is more important than you. There are things more important than you, but most of the time, they're not the things you're told are more important than you. And when something is, stick a lot of quotes around more important than you, when something is more important than you, the thing about it is that it is best something that you value, something that you want, something you're willing to contribute to, something you feel is a necessity that might outlive you, that might, you may never get credit for it. You may never be acknowledged as something. So there you go. Now let's talk about Venus, your ruling planet entering Leo. The dates are as follows. They're written on the Jupiter in Taurus chart at the bottom. You can see their notes in pencil. I'm going to just write Venus dates on them so it's easier to see. Okay, Venus dates. Venus enters Leo on June 5th. Venus leaves Leo on October 8th. So that's 4 months in Leo. In my old age, I've decided that when there's a planetary retrograde, particularly one that takes place in one sign, particularly an inner planet retrograde, right? This is not about, Pluto's going to go retrograde 20 times in Aquarius. So you can't think of it that way. But an inner planet retrograde is often within one sign. And this one is going to be, sometimes they're not, sometimes they jump, but often they're in one sign. This is going to be a retrograde entirely contained in Leo. I think that that's actually the retrograde. The retrograde is Venus in Leo, 6-5 to 10-8. The actual retrograde spans from July 22nd through September 3rd, a big chunk of Northern Hemisphere summer, and in the case of the total span, late spring out until early autumn. So it's a long time for Venus, which tends to move real quick, almost as quickly as Mercury, to be in one sign. And it is the sign of your family. And Venus is the planet of you. It is the planet of your values. And so I will tell you that from doing chart readings for people a long time, and I started years before as a tarot card reader, most people are still completely dominated by the values of their family and think they owe everything to their family and refuse to stand up, stand out, stand apart, and make their own decisions. Venus retrograde, not everyone, by the way, but most people are still caught in the thrall of their families. This includes the people who never mention the words mother and father. Maybe they're older, but still, there's always a relationship. To the extent that that is true, Venus retrograde in Leo is going to help you find yourself, your own needs, desires, intentions, and in a sense to find your own domestic and emotional wealth. The fourth house is about one's domestic reality. It's about one's sense of grounding, and it's about one's sense of security. And this transit, which I've been thinking about in great depth and covered in serious detail in the inner space reading for Taurus. A lot of the reading is based on this. I worked long and hard on this transit. My summary here is that this is about finding your sense of belonging, finding your sense of safety, and in the process, being able to distinguish yourself from the value system of your family. This is particularly true for people who've inherited money from their families, right? People who inherit money from their families are often very nervous about doing their own thing with their inheritance, even if everybody's long since gone. So you can think of, we've all inherited something from our families, right? It might not be monetary in any way, but your privilege and your really necessity at this time in your life is to distinguish yourself and to find your security and your confidence and your sense of belonging in the process of distinguishing yourself and recognizing that your safety has to come from within you, however you view that, whether you view it as a matter of confidence, a matter of choice, a matter of the God source being within you, that is really the only way to feel safe is to really be connected with your spiritual source. And additionally, there may be a reclaiming of something that you have rejected, particularly from your father's side of the family. There's been plenty going on with the unconscious motives of, and psychological hangups of mother being processed. The eclipse on the 19th was really helpful for kind of off-gassing the hidden psychological legacy of mother. It was in the perfect spot to do that. And there may have been some, you know, confrontation with your past or some, you know, rethinking your whole reality of that, or just an unconscious change in movement forward. Venus retrograde in the fourth speaks more to the father. It speaks to the legacy of the father, the father's estate. By inference, older men with resources. So there is something about claiming with that Venus retrograde. The claiming is that the planet Venus is moving back on a quest within yourself for something. The retrograde turns it inward. The retrograde helps us look back for a while. And so there may be some reevaluation here of the influence of your family. And I would suggest that I would suggest that there is some great benefit that you will get from reconnecting with the legacy of your family, particularly your father's side of the family. This may include traveling to some ancestral ground, maybe a house that you previously lived in, even someplace like an apartment building, something to prompt old memories of that relationship from a time that may be in the very, very distant past. But what Leo says more than anything is that it will be worth it. And the Venus in Leo piece is very closely connected to the Jupiter in Taurus piece. They too will be square. The first thing that Venus in Leo does when it enters Leo is it's going to make a square an opposition to Pluto. Let me verify exactly how that looks. Yeah, the opposition of Venus to Pluto takes place at the very tip of Leo and the very tip of Aquarius. So it is highly focused. So there is some this connects to a very deep instinct to make peace with your past and to claim the treasures of your past. But these are not the treasures that are kept in the attic. These are the treasures that are kept on the ground that you discover when you sit in a garden or on a park bench where you once sat with someone or with people who may be long gone. There is something that is going to come resonating out of your past that will provide a level of spiritual and psychological and emotional release, and then also connect you to something that I think there's really no way to get around this, looking at this whole pattern of tremendous potential for healing and helping you enrich your life. That is what I have to say to you today. Happy birthday. Thank you again for your patience with the slight delay in this reading, and more than anything for the time and the trust that you invest. The few dollars is nothing compared to the time and the trust of allowing these ideas into your mind and considering them. Please do listen again and check out the Inner Space written reading. It's pretty special for Taurus. And that's it for now. Again, comments and questions are welcome, and I'll catch you over in another time and place. Bye for now.